want to know how to find it. Seek it out when they hide it. You know it's in the bag when it's an easy grab. But come on, take a chance now. So go, 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 geocache, geocache. And if you need help, we're right there in a flash. If you got a question, just call in and ask. Uncover the stash on the Geocaching Podcast. The Geocaching Podcast.
Welcome to episode 170 of the Geocaching Podcast, September Cacher Coffee. I'm your host, XPunkX, with
Daryl W4.
If you want to participate in our show today, please call 724-444-7444. Our TalkCast ID is 7525. You can also join our live chat room to participate with other listeners, and that can be found at geocachingpodcast.com/live. Click the Join Now button to participate. We have a voicemail line, which is 206-350-3GPS. We're on Twitter at geocachingpodcast.com/Twitter and Facebook at geocachingpodcast.com/Facebook. This episode is brought to you by listeners like you. Thank you for your donations. Daryl, welcome back. It's been a week here, man. You know, last week we couldn't get into TalkShoe. This week we're having some issues with TalkShoe too, so I'm really hoping that it works out this week for us and that we can do the Cacher Coffee here. I mean, I know we are live, but hopefully it actually works all the way through like it's supposed to.
Yeah, and we've got a few people in the chat room now, so I think we're going to be good. Do have a few people asking questions there, so hopefully we'll get around to them. And I even, we'll say, wrangle Drian to talk about coins, because we had a couple of coin questions I saw pop up real quick. But you know, we just had that nice Labor Day long weekend here in the U.S. What did you do with that?
I kind of spent it. Well, I tried to hit 5 caches and we only found one, which is really disappointing. You know, I questioned myself, you know, just jokingly. I was like, man, I'm the host of the Geocaching Podcast and I can't even find any caches. And it was kind of disappointing, but, you know, at least we found one cache. And Julie had to remind me, it's not about the numbers. It's about getting out there and finding and having fun with your family.
Yeah, and there's been many times where we're just sitting there. We have a podcast and we can't find caches. We're not qualified.
Exactly. But you know what? It was one of those times. It just wasn't our weekend. You know, the one I know was muggled because it was it looked like someone cut down trees right around there. So I know the one was muggled. The one wasn't muggled, and I confirmed that with the owner, but I just couldn't find it. And he usually has some hard ones, so I couldn't find that one. And then I don't know what happened, but there's a couple of ones we couldn't find. And finally, we got lucky with an easy one that was like a film can under a park bench, which is really easy. So, you know, one of those that was kind of like, yes, I'm glad we found it, but it was again an easy one.
Yeah. Well, we did 40 caches. Actually, I think it was like 41 or 42 caches this weekend with Team Legend 4. But if it's any consolation, I think we DNF'd like 6 of those. And at least one of them was still there because there were a couple of logs on the same day. And it was fairly early in the afternoon that we got there. So I don't think it got muggled between our visits. But, you know, you never know, because they could have found it at, you know, 8 a.m. when someone from the business showed up and, you know, saw it and said, no, no, go away. But, we just went out for a kind of casual day of getting some numbers, no real serious planning. Just head up this one road with lots of caches and, you know, see what we find.
Yeah, so, and as you guys can probably tell too, I'm starting to get a little bit sick. It's been kind of going around in my family, so if I sniffle and sneeze during this, I'll try not to, but I'm not my normal peppy self, and so hopefully I can get feeling better here soon. Well, Daryl, to kick off some things before we, just as a reminder, we have our monthly Cacher Coffee, which is this tonight's episode. And it's kind of just like sitting around at a coffee shop with your local cachers. Anyone can kind of bring up any topics. So if you're in the chat room with us, go ahead and type your topics if you have it, and Geek Boy will try to get them to us. And if you're on the phone, you want to talk to us, 724-444-7444. And *8 will get you in our queue to talk. Tonight, let's kick it off with some listener feedback.
Listener feedback.
Hi, this is Dudley Grunt. I'm calling in two sort of milestones. I've just found my 100th TerraCache, which was also my 2,300th geocache overall. and it is Craig Hill Channel Lower Range Front Lighthouse. It is code is TCCMQ by Soccer Fanatics. And it's one of three of his lighthouse caches in the area that I found this afternoon to make this a double milestone. And again, that's 100 terra caches and 2,300 overall. Thank you. Bye.
Hello, Geocaching Podcast. This is Red Lights of Southern Maryland. I am currently visiting my parents down in Salisbury, Maryland, which is on Maryland's eastern shore. I brought my bike down and decided I'd head out for a cache today so after your big podcast last week about bike caching. Well, come to find out, I hit a milestone, number 2,900. Have a good day and enjoy the show. Bye.
Hey, everyone. This is Dudley Grun. I'm calling in with another milestone. This is Labor Day. I went out and did a fair bit of caching and reached my 2,200 cache find on geocaching.com. It was the Fallen Firefighters Memorial. It's a national memorial, actually, in Emmitsburg, Maryland. It's GC5A60. It was originally hidden by Pioneer Girl, or published or whatever. And while I was out there, I collected some information for a couple other virtuals, a Civil Defense and 9/11 Memorial. And it should be out soon on some caching site. I'll talk to you all later. Happy trails.
Thank you guys for your milestones. If you have any milestones or feedback about any of our episodes, give us a call on our voicemail, 206-350-3GPS. And I did receive a voicemail from a listener earlier. I had gotten back to him via Twitter, but he had a question about logging with when you're caching with non-premium members and you're a premium member. So let's go ahead and listen to that.
Hi, guys. This is Stan calling from Sparrows Gold in New Jersey. I was hoping you can help me find an answer to this question. I set up an account for our grandsons. They are USS Tony Chris, and I set it up as a basic account. Then they went out with me to find some caches over the weekend, and the one that we did find was a premium member's cache. So when I tried to log their find in, it wouldn't let me do it because they're basically just a basic member. I'm a premium member, and I could log it in. My question is, if they're with me to find it, should it really matter or not? So I was wondering if you knew from geocaching or groundspeak if there's any way around that. I didn't really see a need for them to sign up as a premium member since they only cache with us. Alrighty, and thanks a lot.
All right, so Sparrows Gold, this is the way you do it. And yes, it is okay to log those caches for your grandsons. We do this for our own sons and daughter also when we're caching because they're not premium members. Basically, what you're going to do is you're going to log the cache yourself. And then you're going to click submit log and then log out of the site. And then when you log back in as them, it'll let you log that premium cache. It's because you're already on the log page and it'll log back in and do it. Another way is if you have the field notes, like if you've created a field notes with either the geocaching.com app or any of the other apps that create field notes, you can go ahead and log that. Just have them upload that field note, and it'll log the cache for them. So that's an easy, quick way to do it. And yes, it is approved by Groundspeak, and they know about that kind of loophole, but they leave it there because, again, if you're out caching with non-premium members, they say it's okay to do that.
Yeah, some that actually came up recently on the forums, and they flat out said, look, you know, we realize you're not going to buy a membership for every single person in your family just to log this, so go ahead and do it. And Jeremy even said, we left that in place for a reason.
Yeah, true. And like I said, you know, I've done that several times now on our own accounts for our kids. So it is an easy way to do it. Just log out once you've started to actually log the cache.
One of the things I kind of wanted to mention, too, is that Colin of the UK podcast is trying a GeoScenes project where, from what I gather, he's going to assemble geocaching related photos in sort of a big picture blog kind of thing for like a weekly list of just cool caching photos around the world. So if anyone's interested in doing that, we'll post a link to that in our show notes, and you can go and check that out. At this point, he hasn't done any yet, but he's still looking for submissions.
All right. Now, here's something that has happened kind of developing in the last 24 hours or so. Is if you've been to the geocaching.com site recently, you'll notice that the Get Satisfaction tab, or it's as in the feedback tab, is missing. And they're, from what I understand, they're looking to drop this service. From what I gather, the Get Satisfaction has kind of been less than perfect for them. You could kind of sign up as another cacher, somebody that you're not, fake their avatar, and kind of take over the mem and post mean things and other things. There's no way for them to really monitor that and take care of that. So they've been looking to drop that. If anyone else on the line has any more information about that, give us a call, 724-444-7444. And our TalkCast ID is 7525.
Andy, I actually watched that unfold, and you could tell it was getting on Jeremy's nerves, because what the users were doing is they were signing up and listing their name as Jeremy, or they would sign up for an account and then change their name to Jeremy, or they changed their name. There were a few that were various body parts belonging to Jeremy, and they would get their icon to look very, very similar and then sit there and post as if they were Jeremy and posting official-sounding things. There were some others who were replicating Mountain Man, a very well-respected moderator of the forums, and they would replicate everything about his name, his symbol, all of it. And even when he tried to change it, they kept doing it. And then they'd start getting on there and posting messages, acting like him, but using a lot of foul language. I read earlier today that Jeremy actually tried to post something on Get Satisfaction's very own Get Satisfaction site, and it took them 9 days to respond to his questions about why they don't have service over the weekends. And he's getting so fed up. It was there are people within hours they would have been banned that they would start a new account. It got pretty bad, a lot of foul language. And because it's Jeremy originally thought it would be signed directly to the Groundspeak site, meaning that only people who had an account on Groundspeak would be able to log in, and they came to find out that you did not need a Groundspeak account to get into the system. And that's where a lot of the problems are, is because people, there was no moderation, no control from Groundspeak's end. Any problems had to go through the Get Satisfaction site. So they are looking to drop. There is a site called UVoice or Our Voice that they're looking at that does provide that moderation. But this all happened last night, and I was sitting there, and all of a sudden the tab disappeared, and the conversations, a lot of things dropped, and there were people posting, why can't I find this tab anymore? It all happened within the matter of a few hours yesterday.
All right, well, thanks for that information, and if you guys have any more information on that, if any more unfolds, go ahead and give us a voicemail, 206-350-3GPS. Now, Daryl, I know that Dree's huge on geocoins, and I know that there's been some kind of chatter here going on in our chat room about geocoins. Do you guys want to specifically address that?
Sure. Well, Dree came in with a little wrangling to kind of talk about it, and I went through and tried to find them earlier, but the only one that I was able to find was from KJ Cashers, who wanted to talk about geocoins, but specifically wanted information about the three-ring binder pages to hold them and what size dividers would work best.
One thing I've noticed is a lot of cachers use just on like a 9x11 notebook three-ring binder. The big thing is make sure it's a D-ring, because those pages get pretty heavy with all those coins, and it makes it really difficult for them to flip. There's actually a lot of people who don't like using three-ring binders, myself included, and I don't like them just because the pages get a little unwieldy, coins can go flying out, and pages have a tendency of ripping out too.
Okay, so what do you use? I mean, I know that obviously you don't use the three-ring binder, so what do you use to display your coins?
Well, actually what I do is I take a thick baseball card and some foam, and I cut out the coin in the foam and then stick it all into the baseball card. It makes it a little more difficult to store, but I think it looks nicer.
Are there any other alternatives besides that? If someone doesn't want to do that specific one, have you seen other ways that people display their coins?
I've seen other people use shadow boxes and stuff like that for smaller collections. But the majority of people I know either use binders or do the method that I do too.
Okay, cool. Thanks.
Well, and one of the nice things about the baseball cards is that they're all a uniform size then, which is one of the things that people like about the path tags. But there are also books for geocoins that have the various sizes that are cardboard, kind of like a lot of the books that came out for path tags as well. The thing I don't like about those is they're cut out round, and geocoins have that nice, difference in shape. So they don't all fit into that round holder very well, which also is what makes geocoins a lot harder to deal with.
True, but again, it's one of those things that make the geocoins unique because you get to see all the different designs.
Yeah, and that's why I like geocoins better than path tags, is because it gives you that extra creativity that you can't get with the path tags, because the path tags is always round, it's always the same size, hole in the same spot. You know, it's a lot more interesting to get into the geocoins with all the different shapes and designs.
Actually, if you take a look at the path tags, the hole's not always in the same spot. People do move it around, whether it be up top, down bottom, right, left, but it is always in basically the same position on the coin or path tag.
Yeah, they have to put it in that same spot because that's where the die is, from what I gather. But, you know, you can always rotate the design around and have it in a different spot, but it's always going to be, you know, same distance from the edge and same size. Now, Trip Cyclone is saying that a friend found foam inserts for page sheets that can do the same thing that basically Dree is talking about. And we actually have some of the boxes that we hang up, not really shadow boxes, but similar design that we fill with the felt, and then Dree just cuts out around the coins and sticks them in. And that works very nice if you're looking for a wall display. Not so nice if you want to move it around.
Yeah, definitely. Now, let's talk a little bit about maintenance here. It's kind of becoming the fall season, and at least around here in the United States, it's starting to become fall, end of summer. It's always a good thing time to do a maintenance. Now, Daryl, when as far as maintenance goes, when do you get out and do maintenance on your cache? I know that, what exactly is maintenance for you? Is it replacing the container? Is it log? What exactly, as a good cacher, you know, I know that I don't like finding caches that are completely soaked or stuff where there's no, if there are bigger caches where there's no things to trade in. I guess, you know, for me, I try to at least get out, and if there's been a series of DNFs that, at least if I know it's an easy cache, I try to get out and see if it maybe have been muggled. But what about yourself?
Well, you know, frankly, we just don't get out as much as we should get out. But we really just try to get out, especially if anyone's done a DNF on a cache and it, you know, there's someone that should have been able to find it. And also if they're reporting like wet logs or, you know, broken containers, that kind of stuff. Most of our current caches are actually nanos. So the way we do maintenance on those is we actually just go out, swap out the container and bring it back to the apartment and, you know, replace the log, you know, just clean it up if it needs to, because we have had some of those get pretty dirty after being out there for a while. But it is a big deal to, you know, when you have DNFs, to get out and check on it, because it's surprising how many times a cache will go missing and, you know, you got to go out and check on it. And we hit a few of those this weekend where there's been 2-3 DNFs and no one's been out to check on it. And as the hider, that's your responsibility.
That is. And now, I mean, that brings me back to another point though, too, because I know that I have a cache that I placed at a former place of employment of mine. It was just in the corner of the grounds, and I no longer work there, and it's a completely different direction from where I go now. It's 30 minutes, the complete opposite direction. I hardly ever get over to this area to check on it, and I know people have been saying, needs replacement log, and I kind of put that off, and that was my bad. I apologize right now to the caching community for that. I shouldn't have done that. But, you know, up recently, I just decided to go ahead and temporarily disable it. I really do plan on getting out there and hopefully get, you know, I guess me temporarily disabling it is my way of saying, hey, Andy, you need to get out there and actually replace this log as opposed to just let it go. But now what, I guess, I know I have in the past just archived a cache as opposed to go out and actually take care of it. I know that the container is still out there, and I know that's a bad thing to do, guys. If if you do archive a cache, go ahead and make sure you get out there and at least remove the container. So that way that it's not going to be there in the future for future people. Now, in my case, I did disable that cache, and a kind geocacher went ahead and replaced the log for me. And so that's a good thing to do too, guys. If you do see a cache that maybe had been full or it's temporarily disabled because it needs maintenance as far as like a log or whatever, it's a good thing to go ahead and get out there. And if you've got a spare log, go ahead and put it in there.
Yeah, you know, it's as finders, we are the ones who are out there on a like daily basis checking on these caches. So whenever you see a cache that has a bad log or a bad Ziploc bag, if you have it, replace it. It's, you know, it's always appreciated when you can take care of a cache like that. But the other big thing to look out for is any kind of food items, anything that might be a safety issue, and anything that's not family friendly. You know, we've run into a couple of times now stuff of an adult nature that was in a cache that you wouldn't want kids finding. Yeah. So it's always best to just remove those items.
Same here. We've come across it several times where there's matches or a lighter, sometimes even a knife that, you know, you look, I guess maybe as newer cachers, you may not think about that, but it is something you don't want your kids to run into and grab from a container like that. We've done that several times. If we know that it's not correct stuff to have in a cache, we've gone ahead and removed it. Now, also, speaking of removing things, part of maintenance, if you're a finder or you're the cache owner, if you're the cache owner and you've been to your cache, or some people have said that a travel bug is not in the cache that's supposed to be there, or if you're a finder of the cache and you see, hey, this travel bug that's marked in here is not actually in here, it may be a good thing to go ahead and email the cache owner and tell them that mark it as missing and to get it out of the inventory. And you can do that just by going to the travel bug page. That way that it's no longer in the inventory. Again, you're going to kind of want to, if you're just the finder, you're going to want to let the cache owner know that, but as the cache owner, don't just mark it as missing the first time someone says something, because it could have been that someone picked it up before the next person found it and didn't get a chance to log it on the site or whatever. I know the last time that I grabbed a coin, heaven forbid, I know I accidentally left it in my bag for a few weeks before I remembered it and actually took it out of the, actually, you know, logged it as out of the cache page.
Well, another good thing to do with maintenance is if you found a travel bug that hasn't moved in one of your caches, go ahead and move it, get it out of your cache, because it's, you know, you don't really want stuff sitting in your cache for months on months, you know, especially in these winter months. If it's a more challenging cache that you know, maybe is going to be more difficult even, you know, it's an easy cache during the rest of the year, but with the snow or, you know, rain, whatever is in your area, if it becomes less accessible, then move it out of there and try to get into a cache where people will move the traveler, because you don't want those travelers sitting around months on end not moving. It's not much fun.
Now, something that has been brought up again and again is that we should maybe provide some hints for some newbies too. There's a couple things, terms change from region to region, but some local, at least to the U.S. LPC, if you've seen that, it means lamp post cache. There are some other basic hints for newbies as far as the acronym goes.
The thing is, if you're looking at a hint then and says LPC, you or I are going to know what that means because we've seen it. But for instance, do you know what a PBN is?
Actually, I don't.
That's a real common one around here, which is paint by numbers. You know, they're the little plastic paint cans that the kids use for coloring in their different things, you know, little water-based paints usually. But no one outside of this area is really going to know what that PBN stands for. So, and I've heard other ones like that as well. You know, a lot of them refer to guardrail caches. Some of them refer to nanos in a different way. So it's really a good idea if you're going to give a hint, and you should really give a hint for especially these small micros to give people a little bit of an idea. You know, we DNF'd a couple this weekend that if we had a good hint, we certainly wouldn't have. But it's frustrating for these newbie cachers, and you might want to say something about, you know, for newbies, this is, you know, something a little different. You know, maybe this is a LPC, and then in the description, or in the hint, rather, you say LPC, and then in quotes or whatever, light pole cache.
Yeah, that is a good thing. And I know, especially like for caches around here, like the cache we tried to find this weekend that we couldn't find, I know that the cache hider likes to hide them really deviously, and it really, he's got really, really good camouflage when he comes to actually placing his caches. But, you know, for someone just coming into the area or a newbie, it would have been really, really frustrating to do what I did and search for five caches and only find one. I think I probably would have given up. And, I mean, granted, not all of those. I mean, I like challenging caches too, but as a newbie, you know, it might be easier to have some stuff, maybe even in the hint for the newbie, a good idea of kind of maybe more what you're looking at and things like that. Or like you said, Daryl, if it's a acronym, go ahead and list out actually what that means.
Well, and the thing to remember too is that something like a nano cache really doesn't mean a whole lot to a lot of these users. And if it's something that you're trying to describe that you've made the container, well, that's, you know, that's really bad, because then they don't know what that means at all. We had one cacher who was making their own rocks and gave a really weird hint on all of these rocks that they made. Well, once we knew what it was, we knew what to look for, but they had stamped a little icon in the rock, so you knew what it was, and they were describing that. Well, it was something like a flag or whatnot, and so you're looking around after you've grabbed the hint, trying to find a flag. Well, no, it's a flag icon on a rock. It's not the flag pole. It's not, you know, so we were walking all over the place looking for this, and this is when we were fairly new, trying to find the flag, and we didn't find it. But, you know, if you're making your own containers, you know, it's a problem. And actually, Head Hard Hat was asking in the chat room earlier if anyone has made their own geocache containers or just used the standard style containers. Frankly, I've wanted to and just haven't had a chance. How about you, Andy?
Actually, Micah, and we talked about this, my son Micah had made Head Hard Hat's fire hydrant cache. And if I get a chance and if I think about it, I'll go ahead and place the picture of that on our show notes for this episode. But yeah, it's really cool. It's like made out of PVC. It's not going to be mistaken as a bomb. It won't. But it was kind of cool. And now we're just having a problem finding a place to put it, because it really stands out anywhere you put it. So I'm thinking about placing it at a local fire station, see if they'll give me permission. But yeah, we made that. Other than that, it's not been really anything creative here for us.
Now, Trip Cyclone, as I recall, is actually into some of those weird containers, and he's on the line with us. Have you actually done anything that you can talk about?
I was just thinking about that. I had one that I archived recently. I archived it because some maintenance caused it to be lost, and I just wasn't, and due to the robbery up in Washington, I didn't have any more nanos left. And I had an experienced cacher, took half an hour to find it. And what it is you go, if you go to a hardware store and you go to the section of a hardware store where they have chains, go and find one of the carabiner-looking chain link connectors, one where you have to unscrew the piece to open up the carabiner, and you stick the nano inside of that, close it back up, and then you find somewhere to attach that, preferably maybe a chain. And it'll blend. If you get one right, get a chain that looks relatively new, and you can blend that thing in there. And people will be looking for a nano, and actually the nano is inside something else. And I've hit one of those, and I've had people walk off with the cache and realize it was the cache while they're driving home.
Yeah, we've heard a few of those custom containers where people don't realize they have it in their hand. And we've actually done a few of those where you know, you just take it apart and don't realize you have it in your hand and put it all back together. So those can be really evil.
And I was actually thinking about that with regards to your talking about acronyms, and also for newbies too, because I ran into a situation where some new cachers were just recently DNF'd one of my more difficult caches. And I emailed them back because in their DNF log, one said it might be that it's gone, it might be I'm inexperienced. The other guy just flat said, this one's gone, we couldn't find it. And that's a tip to be careful of when DNFing a cache, especially when you're relatively new, is don't always assume the cache is gone. Oftentimes, especially, but you'll find that you just don't have the experience yet to quite look at it in the right way. I usually don't log that it's gone unless there's clear evidence that multiple people haven't found it. And if I'm the only one who hasn't found it, I'm going to more likely assume that I just couldn't find it. But that raised up an acronym, and it's an acronym for our area. It's called 739, and it refers to instead of DNFing a cache, you just replace the container, even if the original cache is still there. And it's become kind of an epidemic, and oftentimes you can be around our area and you'll find two cache containers on site because people will do that. And the downside is a lot of newbies are picking it up because the people guilty of it oftentimes try and help newbies, and then they teach them that this is acceptable.
Yeah, that is a...
I've heard different terms in other areas. In our area, it's called 739.
Yeah, that is a big problem. And we've even heard similar ones where the cache owner goes out to check on a cache, can't find it, and then replaces it, and about 2-3 weeks later, the original cache returns.
I've heard of those too.
Now, we had a couple of other mentions in the chat room about some cool cache containers that they found, one of them being a fake light bulb with a bison tube in the base. Another one is a Cricut grasshopper that was made by a USA member and sent in. And I've actually found some of those animals. We just found a grasshopper, 3 weeks ago, I think it was, playing with the GPSs. And that was kind of an obvious one because they're plastic grasshoppers, but it's always nice to see something a little bit different.
Yeah, it is. And, you know, it's out of the ordinary, you know, especially even if it's a smaller cache. You know, it's nice to see something where you're especially where you're expecting a nano and you see something like a grasshopper. Yes, technically it's a nano, but it's not what you're thinking.
Yeah, now someone else said, let's see, this was Glantius Pride. It also asked about a pen as the container. Yeah, we've seen a number of the pens and the Sharpies that have been converted into cache containers. One of the big ones around here now has been the mag lights. People are pulling those apart and using those as cache containers as well.
Nice. We've got a lot of really good ideas. If you've got any other ideas for awesome creative cache containers, give our voicemail call, 206-350-3GPS, or you can also email an audio file to 206-350-3GPS at geocachingpodcast.com. Now, Daryl, it's been a really good show here. One of the last things I think we want to talk about on the show tonight is about signing the paper log. When is it okay and when is it not okay to do that? Obviously, what happens, you know, is there ever a time that it is okay not to sign the paper log?
Well, and we've kind of talked about this one a number of times before. Really, if it's available, you have to sign it. And if it's not available, in many cases, it's not a cache that you can claim having found. That's really at the discretion of the cache owner. So, you know, you don't want to just go and log that you found it. You'll want to ask the cache owner first. You make a description, you know, like for instance, if it's a cache that has been frozen and you can't get into the container, tell them, look, I found the container. I tried to get in, but I couldn't. Can I still log it as a find? In that case, yeah, you know, usually they'll let you do it. Or if it's a matter of you try to sign and you can't write on it, in that case I usually just let it go and say, yeah, I found it, but the log was too wet to sign.
Yeah, I would do the same thing. I know there's been one or two times that, looking back on it, I probably should have gone back and signed. One time I didn't have a pen with me. I did find the log. I believe I actually went back and signed that one. But the other time was something when we were on our cache run, we had found there was a like in a park with the bleachers and it had some Velcro under there. We obviously knew was at one time the cache container, but it was just the Velcro. Probably shouldn't have counted that one as a find. We did. There were several people before us that had counted that as a find also. So we kind of went, yeah, let's do it. It was kind of a toss up. Looking back on it, it was one of those things we probably shouldn't have done, but I think we were just a little bit anxious to get numbers that day.
Yeah. And that's when you really start letting the rules lax a little bit. But if it's something where you can't sign the log because of something that's wrong with the cache, then email the cache owner. You know, if it's a mushy log, a wet log, the log's too full, okay, then I usually just claim it. But any other time, if you can't sign the log, you don't sign, you know, if it's on the other side of a river and you can't really get to it, if there's no trespassing signs, that's not a find.
Yeah, I do agree. And like I said, you know, I looking back on the one that we found while on our cache run, we shouldn't have counted that as a find.
Yeah, and unfortunately, you know, most of us, I think, have made some of those kind of mistakes.
Yeah.
Now, is there anyone on the line with us who has anything to submit for this topic? Now, someone actually said that Sharpies are good for the mushy log sheets. It just makes a smudge. But yeah, I've tried the Sharpies. You know, the pens, like the space pens that I like to use, will tear those things up real easy. So don't even try those. Same with pencils. But the Sharpie ends up just bleeding really, really bad.
Yes. Now, we want to thank you guys for coming out and hanging out with us tonight on this episode of the September Cacher Coffee. Thank you for subscribing to the Geocaching Podcast. If you found any value of the content of this podcast, please consider going to geocachingpodcast.com/support. Join us each Tuesday at 9:30 p.m. Eastern on the TalkShoe service. You can call in live at 724-444-7444. Our TalkCast ID is 7525. Our show notes and links to all of our past shows can be found at geocachingpodcast.com. If you have any feedback about this episode or any of our other episodes, give our voicemail a call 206-350-3GPS anytime. Have a safe week and happy caching.